Abroad in Education is a podcast on a mission to discover roots through conscious conversations about EdPats. EdPats are educator expatriates working in institutions outside of their home countries. Now let's get into this episode. Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to the grand finale of season four. As we wrap up this conversation exploring relationships abroad, I have a personal story to share with you. A story that weaves together the threads of my identity as a transnational commuter, and one that gives detail about the generational expatriation blood flowing through my veins. Envision this. It's 2007, and as a young 21-year-old, I ventured out of the United States for the first time on a study abroad trip to South Africa. And little did I know, this short-term adventure would set the stage for a life of globe-trotting and cultural exploration. Since then, I've planted my roots on three continents, traversed the borders of nearly 40 countries, and embarked on an educational career that spans an international landscape. But here's the interesting part. My story is not solely mine to tell. See, the depth of my identity resonates far beyond my own experiences. It delves into the footsteps of my father and the legacy of my grandfather. Intriguing, right? So let's rewind to a time when my grandfather was serving in the Air Force and stationed in Rota, Spain. It was during his active duty when love was in the air. And the day after my grandmother graduated from high school, she had the audacity to join him in Spain and embrace the unknown. It was there in the heart of Sevilla, Spain, that my father was born. A testament to the intertwining of cultures and the far-reaching impact of relationships that forged, or at least was forged, abroad. Okay, so let me clarify one thing. I'm not Spanish, despite my father's Spanish birth certificate. Plus, my linguistic skills in Espanol are seriously muy poquito, which puts my dreams of a dual citizenship on hold. But even if I wanted to pursue dual citizenship, my father developed a deep aversion to airplanes and even leaving our hometown of Alton, Illinois, which makes international travel an uncharted and uninteresting territory for him. And that's fine because, as fate would have it, in celebration of my grandfather's 85th birthday, I decided to stroll down memory lane to talk with him about his experience overseas. Our conversation reveals the untold story of his relationship in Spain, which was an enchanting tale that perfectly encapsulates the theme of this season, relationships abroad. Now, for those of you who follow Abroad in Education on the social media, you are already aware that I recently celebrated Grandpa's birthday milestone during my visit home in June. It's just funny that the celebration coincided with his return from a dual trip to Cartagena, Colombia, and Boquete, Panama. But from my vantage point, the secret to his longevity lies within the wanderlust that still flows throughout his veins. As we bid farewell to season four, I invite you to join me on this final episode, a heartfelt tribute to my grandfather and the profound impact of his relationship, which was formed across borders and essentially resulted in my coming into the world. It's a journey filled with cherished memories, heartfelt connections, and the realization that the essence of my identity lies not mere in labels, but in the transformative power of intimate conversation and a vulnerable discourse with my grandfather. Sit back, relax, and embark upon this poignant voyage together with us. I began the conversation by asking Grandpa what life abroad was like with him and Grandma. So how was life for you and Grandma?
It was beautiful because, number one, we're in a Spain-friendly country. We had people work for us. She got pregnant with Keith, and then the babysitter was 10 cents an hour. We used to have the babysitter over just to have her over. And she also had a maid that came in that cleaned our apartment. And then she had a seamstress. And with the seamstress, the seamstress would come in one day, and the seamstress was a dollar an hour.
Mm.
The seamstress would come in one day. They would go through magazines and stuff like that, looking at that, because remember, Dorothy was very creative.
Okay.
Yeah, and by that, she knew how to cook, I'd be at the tacos, and she knew how to make her own outfits. So therefore, when she got to Spain, her and the seamstress would come over, and they would look over different materials. They would look over different fashion clothes and stuff like that. That would be one day. Then they might go out that day. If not, the seamstress would come over later on during the week, and they'd go out and shop and buy the material, and then Dorothy would create it.
Grandma is a woman that has made wedding dresses by scratch. She's made curtains that are at least three stories tall. She has made my prom dress. Was it literally just the idea of like flipping through magazines and saying, I want this, I want that. We'll create it together. We'll go buy the fabric and we'll make it together. Or what do you remember about that? Like,
well, basically she did the same thing over there. In fact, her wedding dress, no, I purchased that.
Okay.
But I purchased her wedding dress from over there. But when she got there, again, her and this seamstress, I call her seamstress to identify her, they would go out and buy material and come back, and then she would create whatever she was after, dresses and stuff like that. We had three people working for us. One was the seamstress. One was a maid who would come in and more or less pull the covers back in the morning, clean the house, and in the evening, pulling the covers back for us to go to bed. And,
so you all were, this is without children.
Right. And then Keith came along. Dorothy got pregnant with Keith, and the babysitter was 10 cents an hour. So we had three people working on our payroll.
So
the maid,
okay.
The babysitter,
okay.
And the seamstress.
Okay.
So it was a nice life over there.
And just to fast forward, because this is a beautiful story, I've never called Daddy Kiko, but your story as far as how that name got created was what?
They couldn't pronounce Keith.
With a T-H.
Yeah, so the babysitter called him Kiko.
Yeah.
And that's how he got the name Kiko, because they couldn't pronounce Keith.
I love it. Okay, so where we are in the story, I'll say this is pre-Kiko. and Grandma's got a seamstress. You all got a cleaner. This is before the nanny.
Mm-hmm.
This is a beautiful story because when I started working in Morocco, I had the opportunity to travel to Tangier, and we took a speedboat mm-hmm. over to Gibraltar, and the same picture. And Grandpa, do you remember the year when she was in Gibraltar?
Well, if we were in Spain from 60 to 62. Let me catch up, man. Okay, I was California 57 to 60, and then I went to Michigan from 60 to 62. So then I was in Spain around 63 and 64. Franco was still the dictator in Spain.
So 62. When I was teaching in Morocco, I had the opportunity to go to Gibraltar, which was 2011, 12. I also had the opportunity to go to Gibraltar, and I put on social media this picture of Grandma holding this monkey
mm-hmm.
side by side to the picture where I was holding a monkey, and the same time mm-hmm. was in Gibraltar. So we have had the opportunity to share that experience. And you said it was her and her homegirls that was traveling to Gibraltar.
You know, we're in Spain to begin with. They had the tourism lot, and the girls went on. When I say girls, they're their friends.
Right. Air Force wives.
Right.
while grandma's at the house with the seamstress. What are you doing? What's your life in Sevilla?
I'm on duty at the base.
You're on duty? And what does that look like, Grandpa?
Well, just regular 8 hour, just going on duty and maintaining the planes. I was there when they phased out the B-47s.
Tell me a little bit about the planes, because I mean, as a person that's just hearing your story, I don't know anything about planes. So is it a size? Is it war? Is it, you know, what are the differences between the planes?
It's training and maintenance. Basically, the B-47, you know, they would send them out on training missions and come back.
And what's that mean, training missions?
Just training, because it's going out, flying around, playing war games.
Okay, just in the air.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And this is without simulation, like they're actually in the air playing.
Right.
Okay.
Right. The simulation came for training to be familiar with the aircraft. But then from that point on, you was in the aircraft.
Okay. And what were you doing, Grandpa?
I was maintaining the aircraft. So in other words, I was an electrician. So I took care of the electrical and heading systems.
Okay.
But electrical is the easiest way to deal. So in other words, we maintained there. And then they had another training that called it training, but what it was, the B-52s would leave the United States and on the way to Russia. And so what they would do, they would go toward Russia, circle Russia, and then come back. So there was always planes in the air circling Russia. They call them training missions.
What was going on in Russia at that time that you all needed to circulate them?
Well, that's just, like we do it now, spy missions.
Okay.
So, like I said, they called it training exercise, but the exercise involved circling Russia. So we always had some bombers out there flying around Russia. And they probably had some flying around the United States, too. But, you know. And so, therefore, we maintained what we call the tankers, the refueling planes. So we would send refueling planes up there to refuel them.
Oh, in the air.
In the air. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. So let's get back to the relationship piece, because you're giving us a piece of your duties and being in the Air Force and stuff. So what we've talked about thus far is Grandma leaving the States, coming to Sevilla, Spain, her being set up, all that stuff. So fast forwarding a little bit, you all were preparing to have a baby, which was Daddy.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about Daddy.
Well, he was born over there, and of course, they love little black kids. I mean, you couldn't walk out in the street with somebody wanting to grab him up and hug him, little black kid.
And the funniest thing, Grandpa, I'll say, I always have to tell people, I say that my father was born in Sevilla, Spain, and they're like, oh, your dad's Spanish. And I say, no, he's not Spanish. It was, my grandfather was in the Air Force, and my grandmother had, you know, moved there. But Daddy has these bright eyes. He has these, what could be defined as good hair. So they're like, how is he not Spanish, you know? So the idea of Kiko, Daddy's name, which I never call him by, you know, being defined by a Spanish nanny who could not pronounce the TH in Keith. So the better name was for Kiko. Tell me about you all raising Daddy and what that was like in Sevilla.
Well, you know, because he and I, let's put this way, we go out drinking together. So they had no age limit as far as drinking alcohol.
You and who?
So he and I, your dad.
No, in Sevilla?
Yeah, I'd send him up on the bar. He and I'd be drinking beer.
A child?
Yes.
Grandpa, are you serious?
I'm serious. Now, the fallout from that is he blamed his alcoholism from that.
Wait, you had a baby in the bar with you?
Yes.
I thought, wait, I'm like, no, you're back in the States. So you're in Sevilla, Spain with a baby on the bar as you're drinking.
Yes, and I don't know what happened to those pictures, but he had his beer and I had the beer, and he was sitting on the bar.
And how old was he at this point, Grandpa?
Old enough to walk. So how old is that?
One.
Okay, 1 or 2 years, yeah.
1 or 2 years old. Okay.
But see, he blames that when he was going to Alathon there. He blamed that. He blamed me for that. He said, what got him started on alcohol was he and I will go to the bars in Spain.
And he remembered that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened to those pictures.
And what was the culture of having babies in the bar? Was that just normal?
Yeah. I said, they don't have any age limit as far as drinking. But see, Spain, there was a culture. If a person was walking down the street drunk, he was an American.
And that was okay.
No, it wasn't okay. That was a shame. That's the thing about it is, when you say, wait a minute, when you say what's okay, it's okay to drink. It's not okay to get drunk.
Okay.
And if a person was staggering down the street, they automatically knew that he was an American.
So you and Daddy, as a two-year-old, one-year-old, two-year-old, you were just in the bars. You weren't staggering down the street drunk.
No. I'm just giving you the attitude over there.
Okay.
So it's not like it was a very shameful for a person to get drunk.
Okay.
So people didn't. They got high, you know, sing songs and stuff like that, but not drunk.
Okay.
That was just a culture over there.
Okay.
So, yeah, we would go to the bar. And what they have a culture over there called tapa hopping.
Tapas. Okay.
You know what I'm talking about, tapping.
I do. It's a little small place, okay. And you go from one place to the next.
Yeah, that's right. We call it tapa hopping.
Okay. Now, was it just you or was it you and your comrade?
No, me and your dad.
Okay. And what was it like? I mean, when you would take him to these places, was it women approaching you? Was it bartenders saying something? Like, what was that?
No, women wouldn't be approaching anything like that. Just something to do in the afternoon.
Okay. So then you and grandma, you have this child, you're abroad. Like, if you could think about some of the most intricate moments as far as raising daddy abroad, what are some of the moments that come to your mind?
Well, basically the memories were some of our friends, you know, while we were over there, the 3 years we were over there, other couples would come and go under the same circumstances.
Transit.
And I tell you one thing that's funny. Now, we always had I'm going to spot over in Spain. We always had the desire to find out the latest sounds, music, or when anybody would come over there. For instance, my friends knew that Dorothy, your mother, was coming. So they asked me to have her bring the latest sound.
Which was like records.
Yeah, records and stuff like that. And what happened was, I never will forget this. So when Dorothy got there, then, you know, we had our, we set up, you know, she's here and she brought some music with her. And the room was, I would say full, but, you know, maybe 10 to 15 people, 20 people. And we listened to the sound because they were new to them. Dorothy made the comment, "I can't believe all these people came to see me." And I kept my mouth shut.
Which is
why. I never forget that.
Why'd you keep your mouth shut, Grandpa?
Because they came to hear the music, not her.
Mm-hmm.
She made the comment, "I can't believe all these people came to see me." No, they didn't come to see you. They come to hear the music.
Mm. The new music. That's what's going on in the States. And what was the new music? Who was playing?
I can't remember back then, but I remember Cannonball and Nancy Wilson had that one LP out. Kitty Lester. See, these names you don't remember. Kitty Lester and back in those days. Julie London. It was hard to remember back then. But that was, anybody who come from the States, please bring the latest music.
Hmm.
And of course, that would be on LPs.
So that means, if I understand you correctly, Grandma was going back and forth?
No. This was when she first. No, but anybody who came from the state, we would always implore upon them to bring the latest music.
Mm, because where you were, you didn't have access to it.
No, the Air Force radio. So all the latest music, we had to depend on people coming from the states.
And this was black music in particular.
Right.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm. And was it just black music? Was it black intellectualism? Like, what was being said in the articles?
No, black music.
Just music.
That's all we were concerned about. Yeah. And of course, we knew about Malcolm X and all that, but all that was only news we could hear would be from the newspaper they called Stars and Stripes. And of course, they wouldn't have any articles like that.
Mm.
But the latest sounds, when I say sounds, the latest music, we had to depend upon people coming from the United States. If any person went to the United States on leave, he would come back with records.
Okay.
And we would play them. And the irony of the thing about it is that whereas in the United States, there were the 60 cycles was electricity. In Spain, it was 50 cycles. So we had to modify the record players to play the music at the right beat. And one of the things we would do, of course, you wouldn't know this, but the spinners, we had to take what we call safety wire and wrap it around the spinners So therefore, it would increase the RPMs from 50 to 60.
What's that mean? Make it go faster?
No, because everything was on 50 cycles per second, so the music was recorded at 60. So if you take the music and put it on a regular record player, it would be slow. So we had to modify it in order to bring it up at the proper speed.
OMG. Okay. So we're talking about the historic record players where mm-hmm. you had to speed it up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow, Grandpa.
Because the historic record players, they had a spindle.
Yeah.
That would drive the record.
Yeah.
Well, so what we had to do, we had to modify the spindle to speed the record player up. And a lot of times, all it was, it just meant taking we call it a safety wire, but it's a wire, and we would wrap it around the spindle, and therefore it would increase the speed of the record.
Oh, wow.
Well, here's the thing about it, the electricity over there, and usually it's only evident in the record players because your appliances were not impacted with a 50 or 60 cycle. However, it was 50 cycles, and somehow life was slower.
Mm.
It was hard to pick it up, but life was slower when she got out of state.
I love that. I love that, Grandpa.
And what the thing about it is to look at the power outlet. And again, over there, you know, like I said, walking out at 50, 60 doesn't make that much difference, but you do realize that. Although we're talking at a certain pace, but when you talk to a native Aruban, that you find out you're talking just a little bit faster than he or she.
Yeah. And I find that in many of my conversations, like I will, you know, that whole mantra of let me make a long story short, you know, like mm-hmm. it's that whole mantra of let me speed this up so I don't waste your time. But I thank the Lord, I've had conversations that they're like, no, don't speed it up, slow it down. So I can hear you. I want the details. I want the story. So, Grandpa, let's move forward. I guess the thing that's on my mind right now is you've given us a lot of information with your experience with Daddy. The idea of this episode is relationships abroad. Tell me about some of those experiences that you had with Grandma abroad. What were some of those things?
Well, being in a foreign country and just getting married, you have no choice but to learn each other.
Okay.
Because you couldn't pick up the phone and call mom. Definitely couldn't go home to mom. So we had to learn to adjust to each other.
Yeah.
Because I remember one time that we were having an argument or something like that, and then I left out, and then I got stressed. I said, wait a minute, I'm the one paying for this apartment. If anybody leaves, she leaves. So I had to go back, and we had to, you know, deal with it.
And what were you all disagreeing about? Was it cultural?
Oh,
was it just living together? Was it two people that were living their lives?
Yeah,
like
living together and getting on each other's nerves. and that's, you know, that's the way it was. And then sometimes listening to other friends, they influence, oh, I wouldn't do that.
Oh.
I wouldn't take that.
Yeah. No, it's a small group of African Americans abroad. So they have their own ideas about what marriage and living abroad should look like. And if it's not that, you know, if somebody's experiencing one thing and they're not experiencing the same thing, that it's not right type thing.
I remember one experience that we were all, I'd say we were at the NCO club.
Okay.
And this new couple was with us. And the girl became quite adamant. And what it was that, I don't know, Dorothy and I were discussing something, but this girl said, well, you know, told Dorothy, you don't have to take that and all this here. And what I did, I left them out there. So they had to get back on their own.
Left them where, Grandpa?
At the NCO club.
Which is, give me proximity.
Well, the NCO club, the base was a good, you know, 20 minutes or 20 miles away from the town. And so I just came back. And they just had to get back on their own.
How did they get back?
I don't know. But I know.
All you know is they were talking stuff, and you was like, what you won't do is make me the villain, so y'all figure out how y'all getting home.
Yeah, and so I look back upon it and say that I was wrong, because I know I had three husbands that was mad at me.
Mm.
But see, we had all gone out to the basin, and she was saying something, you know, and it was put between me and Dorothy. And she was putting Dorothy, you know, over me, you know, you don't have to do this thing. So I just left. And, you know, back then they didn't have phones or anything like that. It wasn't like they had phones, but it wasn't like they could pick up the phone and call.
Yeah.
Didn't have cell phones back then.
So at least you said you feel bad about it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't know, I didn't realize how. Now, they were in Spain, so there wasn't like that much danger.
Yeah.
But there was a danger because crime wasn't that bad there.
But they were getting on your nerves. They triggered you, and you left.
Right. It wasn't they weren't getting on my nerves, but what this girl was doing was putting Dorothy over me, saying, you know, that she should do this and she should do that in spite of what my wishes were.
Talk more about that, Grandpa, because I think the biggest thing as far as, like, relationships abroad, I want you to talk more about you and Grandma's relationship. So when it comes to her moving abroad, you all being together, you all creating a child together, like, what was life abroad? Because essentially, and I'll talk about basically after you all were in Sevilla, Spain for so many years, you ended up coming back to America and creating this life in Alton in St. Louis. But what was abroad? Like, what was the relationship abroad in Sevilla, Spain?
It depends upon relationship. That's what we only had each other.
Yeah.
And of course, there was also fornication, stuff like that going on among them because, number one, there weren't that many black females compared to the black males that was on base. And, of course, the black males, they had the Spanish women, but they weren't like a black woman.
So were the Spanish women hanging out with the black women or no?
Well, they didn't quite know how to handle them. But I'm talking about the black male had the advantage over the Spanish female. Of course, like she's got another interest, you know, she's thinking financially. And, of course, there were, you know, prostitution was a norm over there. So the black male always had the more than willing Spanish female. And a lot of times it had to do with financial because, you know, he was able to support her.
Yeah. And her family.
Yeah. And even being married, you know, there was the temptation even to go out and let's party. And I can share one thing with you. I don't know if you want to put it down or not. But anyway, Dorothy was pregnant with Keith and obviously pregnant. In fact, Dorothy was about 8.5 months. The baby was due. So therefore, sexual intercourse was not a priority during that time. So my friends, feeling sorry for me, came over. And when they came over, I had an idea why they came over. And all of a sudden, my stomach knotted up. And I tried to go to the bathroom, couldn't pass anything like that. So then I said, okay, let's go. And we were going to go to a particular spot where this girl was that they knew they was going to have sex with. The closer I got to the destination, the more knotted my stomach became. And to the point was that we got to the meeting area where we're supposed to meet, where we're supposed to meet her at. And when she showed up, my stomach just, I just about doubled over in cramp. I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. All I know is that I was cramping bad. And so I told him, I said, man, I got to go back home. And because I couldn't, I was practically bent over. And I said, I got to go back home. And the moment I started leaving, the cramping was going away. When I got home, there was nothing wrong. And to this day, once in a while, I figured that it was a nerve or something. Because once in a while, I'll get that feeling again. I said, there's something bothering me. But at that time, it was so relevant. I don't know what it was, but I was bent over in cramping. Couldn't do a thing. Almost to the point I couldn't walk. And as soon as I turned around and left the group, started going away. When I got home, it was gone.
Did anything come of it, Grandpa?
No. Just that I ain't forgot it, but I cannot figure out what that was. That had to be a nerve or something.
Amen.
So again, I wondered, I said, well, maybe Dorothy had roots on me. Because in Saginaw, you know, they believed in that. So they had this one lady up there, a mother, she had two men living in the house with her. And the story was that she had roots on them. They would make these teas and stuff. Use herbs and make certain beverages, you know, certain concoctions. But this woman had two men living in the house with her, and they were saying that's the reason.
Because she had roots on them.
Roots on them. And I began to think of Dorothy had roots on me, because my stomach knotted up to the point I couldn't do a thing. It was about, you know, two of us, three of us. When she appeared, I almost bent over in pain. And like I said, once I turned around, and as soon as I started leaving, it started going away. Because approaching it, it was getting worse and worse. It started at the apartment. And as we were walking, the more pain
worse
I was
and worse. Yeah, that's interesting. I'm not even going to tap into it. I'm going to just leave it where it is, Grandpa. I'm going to leave it where it is.
But once in a while, even later, like once in a while, I get that, and I begin to wonder, there's a nerve out there that's really there.
Say more.
Well, I just say, and I had to deal with it. So wait a minute. I remember getting this nerve before, this feeling before.
Okay.
There's something going on.
But is it intuition?
I would say so. I don't know.
So not a rut, but intuition?
It'd be intuition, not a rut, no. Mm-mm. I was wondering if Darth ever told me, but the thing about it is, it had to be intuition. I think all of us have experienced something ain't right.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe it was the universe saying, you don't need to be here.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And the fact that you felt that feeling post-Sevilla, maybe it's just intuition.
Yeah, it has never been as bad as it was then, but I know something I have a cramp. Something, okay, something's not right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Something's not right.
Yeah. The conversation that we're having right now, Grandpa, is very intentional. I mean, as far as like having this conversation with you on the podcast and having this conversation with you as far as relationships abroad, like the biggest thing that I see as far as value as bringing you into this space is the fact that you are 85, correct me? 85?
85.
You're 85 years old. You are a person that has been attracted by Washington University to do studies on. You're a person that still drives. You're a person that still dates. You're a person that is still living your life to the capacity of not only 100% to put, I mean, I would say 150%. Like many of the things that I've experienced that I've talked to you about, like you are my inspiration, teaching me about technology, teaching me about the things that I need to do with my life because you are inspired and you're passing that inspiration back to me. But I would say that like if we could take all of that and kind of muster it up in this episode about relationships abroad, as far as the listeners, what is it that you would tell them about dating abroad, about living abroad? I mean, you're 85, Grandpa, and you have a trip to Fogueze, Panama. You're still traveling. You're still doing your thing. Like, what is it that you would say to that listener?
Here's the thing. I don't think I'm by myself. I think this is the new norm for people of my age. It's just like when I go to this exercise group, we're not sitting on our laurel. All of us are moving about. They got the Oasis here and AARP, and I'm with this celebrity senior group, and we're going to go to Branson next, with the end of this month, to see Esther. I'm talking about people in the group. We've signed up for a cruise a year from now. I say I'm not alone. I think there are a lot of people out there like me now.
What is like you, Grandpa?
Active groups. They're not relegating themselves to the old folks' home.
Active seniors. Active seniors? Or yeah, how would you define yourself? Don't let me put that on you. How do you define yourself?
Well, I'm just active. The thing about this, the reason why I keep moving is because I don't want to, that's why I can stay alive. I like this exercise. I'm glad, well, first, exercise was done by Zoom, so I'm so glad it's done by Zoom because I was pitiful. So now that they are alive, I'm glad to see them that they are alive because I'm exercising. I live across the street from a park, and there are people forever walking their dogs in the park, my age, walking their dogs in the park. So we're active. And I had to laugh. People say, you don't look 85. Well, pretty soon they're going to stop saying that.
When will they stop saying that?
When I look 87, 88.
Grandpa,
so
I'm going to be mindful about putting a picture of you on this episode, because even when you look 86, 87, 88, you still look youthful. Like, people don't believe me when I tell me that my grandpa is 85 and he's still driving. He's still doing his own thing. He goes to the thrift shops. He goes to the airplane and travels to Cartagena and Colombia and Panama and all these different places. Like, people don't realize that elder does not mean retirement and sit down. Like you are a person that is still living and refuses for reasons that I completely applaud for not sitting down.
Yeah. And if you will go on YouTube and dial up Cartagena, you see some people over there like me, and some of them will be alone. When I took the cruise with the celebrity cruise, it was not the carnival. It kind of tickled me that, you know, people said, you're going to sign in on celebrity. And however, the ship shut down at 11 o'clock. Everybody was in bed, you know, whereas, you know, carnival is party time.
Right.
But I was surprised the number of people that were by themselves on the celebrity.
But let's just say that even on the celebrity cruise, you were disappointed because they went to bed at 11. You was ready to party.
Well, that's kind of teasing. You're right, because they didn't have that many activities going on after the time of night. You know.
You was ready to party, Grandpa.
Yeah, because I have to relate. Tickle me. I was in, this is another rabbit hole. But I was in Vegas, and this was the end of my tour, end of my stay. So I'm at a hotel, say 3:30, something like that, outside waiting for the cab to take me to the airport. And these other cabs were stopping, and these young ladies coming out bright-eyed and everything, 4 o'clock in the morning, they were there to party. And I had to laugh. I'm supposed to be in bed. These people are just now coming out. Bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, heading for the dance floor. And so that's the way, life is. It's just, I think there's more of me out there than there were before. And I think that's just the way, you might say, life is changing, especially with the celebrity seniors. The way them mamas are signing up for different things. That's the way life is becoming.
Amen. Well, Grandpa, I'll tell you, what I can say is I am completely in gratitude, full of blessings and love and, you know, every word that I could use to express the fact that I am truly grateful to be able to not only record you on this podcast, but to be able to continue to have these conversations with you. There are a lot of people that do not have the privilege of being able to talk to their grandparents. And everything that you've shared in this episode is literally the minimum of what people get to understand as far as like who you are and what you've done to my life. So I have to say, I love you. I'm so grateful for you. And I thank you for just sharing your experience, for continuing to be you, Grandpa.
I don't know anybody else. So
this podcast is produced by Dr. Tiffany Lachelle Smith. Be sure to follow Abroad in Education on IG and Twitter, and subscribe to my newsletter at abroadineducation.com.